Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, brought to you by globalresearch.ca. Visit the website. We're always looking to get whatever help is possible from readers, from listeners to this program. Global Research is completely independent, as this program is. Everybody involved does it as a volunteer, so we're completely dependent on the help from readers and listeners. Those of you familiar with it know what a fabulous site it is, and this program is a complement to it. So in print, on air, we want to present vital information that you need to know. And I think my guest this morning highlights that as well as anyone. Bill Engdahl is back. Bill is familiar to regular listeners of this program. I certainly get emails from some saying, when will Bill be back? Well, today's the day. For those who don't know Bill, he's a leading researcher. He's an economist. He's an analyst of the New World Order. He's written extensively on energy, on politics, economics, and he's done it for over 30 years. He's got a brand new book out. His two previous ones are absolutely fabulous. The new one is every bit as good. The other two, his book called A Century of War on Oil and Geopolitics. This stuff never goes stale. It's as fresh now as when it first came out. And his other book is called Seeds of Destruction on how the ag giants. Ah, terrific. Bill, I'm just introducing you, so I'll finish that, and then we can jump. I'll let you jump right in, but talk about A Century of War, and your other book, Seeds of Destruction, on how ag giants want to patent all life forms to force GMO foods on everyone. What a horrible thought! Bill's new book just out is called Full Spectrum Dominance: Totalitarian Democracy in the New World Order. What a timely subject, so we want to talk about it and also bring in what really is playing out right now. Bill does fabulous work, and this book is fabulous, but, of course, he can't write about events that haven't yet happened. Bill, that's about the only skill I don't think you have. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Stephen.
Oh, it's great to have you on. We sure want to get in as much about the book as possible and also bring in what's happening right now a little bit in Iran, which strikes me, I sure want your thoughts on it, but it strikes me as a classic example of the latest Washington-instigated attempt at color revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Any, your thoughts on it?
Well, there are several aspects, several layers of the situation in Iran. I think one layer is the faction around Rafsanjani and the Bazaari faction, or the business financial faction in Tehran. And they very much would lean toward liberalization and an opening up of the country and a weakening of the power of the mullahs and the theocracy. On the other hand, Ahmadinejad and Khamenei, the supreme leader, are trying to hold on to the status quo structure. The problem is aggravated by the internal economic crisis. And, of course, the plunge of oil prices, as you had the case in Russia, from $147 just a year ago down to, 2 months ago or 3 months ago, we were heading in the direction of $30 a barrel. Now we're back up slightly above 70 or thereabouts. But that had an aggravating effect on the situation in Iran. In that context, I think
Bill,
the situation...
Bill, let me interrupt you because you know the drill. We need to break away.
I'll be here.
Oh, indeed. Yeah. Of course, the economic sanctions and the rest have done their damage as well.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Bill Engdahl. We will get into a full discussion on his new book, Full Spectrum Dominance. Bill, let me let you pick up on where you were. I do understand there is some internal conflict between
let's
sides in this. Yeah. Just one question. Do you think they, despite that internal disagreement on how the country should be governed, do you think they would be complicit in a high-risk strategy like what's going on now?
Let's step back a second outside of Iran and look at the grand strategy of Washington in the Obama administration. The defense secretary, the foreign policy, all the major parameters are unchanged. What has changed are the tactical means to the strategic end of full-spectrum dominance over Eurasia. And what would suit that Washington-Obama agenda, Obama doesn't script the agenda, he simply is the implementer and a very skillful one, but what would suit that agenda would be a liberalization regime change in Iran that would open the way for Iran's natural gas to be linked up to the Nabucco pipeline, which is a project backed by Washington, as a way to lessen the influence of Moscow over the gas energy supply lines of Western Europe, and thereby to weaken the links between Germany and Russia. So long as there's that interdependency between Western Europe and Russia, there is going to be a great reluctance of Germany, Western Europe, to sign on full scale to that Washington agenda. And I think that's the significance of anything happening in Iran. I don't have the check stubs. I don't have the NSA intercepts. The NSA certainly has, but I don't. About the relation of Rafsanjani to certain Western intelligence services. But we can rather imagine that the kind of twittering actions that are being generated into Iran and the role that BBC is playing now, as they did in 1979, is certainly taking maximum advantage to try to create a regime change in that country that would be more favorable to a Western agenda of isolating Russia, balkanizing Eurasia, and, of course, Ahmadinejad is very close to China, Russia, and the countries of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. So without getting bogged down into the who shot John of the internal Iran, if it's a color revolution, what color and whatnot, I think the main thing is cui bono and what is the long-term agenda of Washington in that region. And that's full-spectrum dominance, as I say in the book.
Oh, and you certainly cover it very, very well in the book, Bill. There are so many examples, and they play out in all you did. Oh, I'd love to go on with Iran, but let's talk about the book. It really is encyclopedic with everything that you cover. I wrote about it. I put out a part one today. My part two will come out on Wednesday, but there's no way I could cover it all unless I wrote my own book. But why do it? You've already done it. So much. Explain the basic idea behind this, and it's the Washington power game and conflict between Russia and China and so on.
Basically, the point that the reason for the book is that it became increasingly obvious as the course of the Bush-Cheney administration wore on, and nothing, I want to stress this to listeners, nothing strategically has changed one iota in the Pentagon agenda since the election of Barack Obama, the apostle of change. The long-term strategic agenda is institutional. It's determined by military-industrial complex. It's determined by the financial base of power of the dollar system. And that agenda has decided that the only way to maintain this imperium is through total military control of all the key oil and energy choke points around the world, and the isolation and total dismemberment of Russia as the only potential military counterweight to that. So, in effect, the Cold War never ended. Most Americans don't have a clue that that's the case. They think that Vladimir Putin is some nasty, unfriendly, ungrateful sort who's become president and now prime minister of Russia, that he sounds like an old throwback to the communist era, that he's going around killing all the liberal journalists in Moscow and creating a dictatorship. And what they don't realize is that it's been Washington since 1991 and the collapse of the Soviet Union and the collapse of the Warsaw Pact defense organization. Why do we still have NATO to this day? Why is a Neanderthal relic of a Cold War era now not just existing, but expanding right up to the door of the Kremlin, right up to the door of Moscow. And why is the U.S. militarizing places like Afghanistan to create the largest land-based aircraft carrier, as one Russian analyst put it, in the world? That's all that Afghanistan is today for the Pentagon. Something like 17 U.S. military bases dotted throughout Afghanistan, and the targets are not the Taliban, I wager. They are not al-Qaeda or whatever one might want to call this mysterious organization. The target is air bases that could strike at China, that could strike at Uzbekistan, that could strike at Kazakhstan, break off oil pipeline and gas pipeline links between Russia and Central and East Asia and Southeast Asia. So that is the only constellation on the face of the earth that can contain this Pentagon agenda gone amok since the end of the Cold War.
And what you're saying, what you're saying, and you spelled out so well in the book, Bill, Russia is the only power because of its nuclear arsenal that could threaten this country. China, in contrast, is nowhere near the military.
I would put it another way, Stephen. I would say not the only nuclear power that could threaten the United States. It's the only nuclear power left with a convincing nuclear counterweight to deter some mad folks in the Pentagon and the U.S. establishment who are tempted by the idea of a nuclear first strike against Russia. And that's a pretty hair-raising prospect. But no, there is no debate inside the United States. There is no public debate in the responsible media, which should be responsible but aren't, and namely the New York Times, the Washington Post, ABC, NBC, CBS, or whatever. This should have been the debate, the national debate of all debates. And the idea that you're putting so-called missile defense on the doorstep of Moscow in Poland, you're putting missile emplacements in Poland, controlled, the only key held on those emplacements will be held by the Pentagon, not by the Polish government, and you're putting advanced radar arrays in the Czech Republic. And as Putin rightly pointed out, this is like scratching your left ear with your right hand. This is not to guard against Iranian rogue missile attacks on the United States. That's a ludicrous joke. It's precisely aimed at Russia. And the danger is, and this is where it's so mad, there have been serious American military strategists who've been in the Arms Control and Defense Agency over the years who have written critiques on this, but the major media is just numb, like they were on the fake information that led up to the Iraq War under Bush, Cheney 1 and 2. These missile installations are not a defensive against potential Russian attack, aggressive Russian attack. It's the missing link to nuclear first strike. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this, think about what it means. The U.S. is preparing to be ready for a nuclear first strike against Russia. And what is a Russian chief of staff of the armed forces going to do increasingly as that comes nearer and nearer, inch by inch, over the next 2 years? He's going to tell his president and his prime minister, we had better launch now while we still can, otherwise Russia will be a atomic wasteland in a matter of a few months. So this is insanity raised to the quadruple power. It's just so mad, and there's absolutely no discussion about this in the responsible Western media.
Oh, absolutely, Bill. And the missing link, as you point out, is to have a so-called missile defense that works. But experts who know the most about this, independent experts not connected to the Pentagon, say the idea of having a fail-safe system that really would work is impossible.
Well, you don't need a fail-safe system, Stephen. All you need is a half-baked system that knocks out any. You launch the first strike, and there's a few missiles in Russia that are left and able to lumber out of the silos, and all you need is to knock those out with your primitive missile defense. So you don't need a perfect system. That's the point that everybody is missing. You don't need a perfect system.
That's assuming it would work in the first place, Bill.
Well, I assume it would. I assume it would. It's too dangerous not to.
Well, Russia has intelligence just the way we do.
Mm.
We infiltrate them with our spies. They infiltrate us with their spies. As you say, if they suspect that something is imminent, you know, not tomorrow, but next week, next month, they're not going to sit around and wait.
Yeah.
They're gonna go first. They might be smarter than we are, Bill.
Well,
but nobody's
I think
smart.
This is a game where, you know, no side is smart. It's just it's insanity. And the Russians were on their way to dismantle their nuclear arsenal after the end of the Cold War. Gorbachev had an agreement, he thought, with James Baker III, the Secretary of State under Father Bush, at the time, and James Baker said, yes, we will agree if you give us East Germany, communist East Germany, we will agree that NATO will not extend eastward to former Warsaw Pact countries. What did NATO do? It extended to every single Warsaw Pact country, and it's trying, Washington is trying through hell and high water, through its puppet regime in Kiev, in Ukraine, and also in Georgia, to get those two failed states into NATO. What does that mean? If they're in NATO, the rules of NATO are that should there be a Russian action like we had last August in Georgia, then Germany, France, and all the other NATO members would have to come and declare war against Russia. So this thing has the potential for madness.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Bill Engdahl, talking about his book, Full Spectrum Dominance. Bill, one point I'd like to emphasize that you made, and then a question. There's no question in the world, and my goodness, in my own writing, I've said it so many times, it simply does not matter whether we have George Bush and Republicans in power or Obama and Democrats in power. The same power structure exists. There is no difference. So moving from one to another, it's all seamless. Any differences are cosmetic, small. The big stuff, the big issues never change. And my estimation of what I've seen in the past 5 months is it looks like Obama is maybe even more dangerous than George Bush. But a question. We just had a meeting in Yekaterinburg, Russia, BRIC countries, SCO countries, de-dollarization or a basket of alternative currencies came up. What are your thoughts on that and the geopolitical significance of that meeting as a potential alliance getting hardened in opposition to what these countries see Washington is doing?
Well, this is very much what I speak about in the Full Spectrum Dominance book, and that is the one, if we look at a map, and it's very useful to do this from time to time, pull out the old school atlas and open it up and look at the map of Eurasia in the context of Western Europe, in the context of the Middle East oil region, in the context of Africa. And it goes back to something a British geography professor, Halford Mackinder, said in a 1904 lecture that actually set the strategic background for World War I and World War II and everything subsequent to World War II in terms of regional wars, and that is the doctrine of British geopolitics. He said, who rules Eastern Europe commands the heartland. The heartland for him was essentially Russia, Ukraine, and that crucial part of Eurasia. Who rules the heartland commands the world island, or what we call today Eurasia, from Europe to China and Russia on the eastern side. And who rules the world island commands the world, because if you control Eurasia, you have the ability to project power and dominate the Middle East oil region. You have the ability to strongly influence the future of Africa. And as Brzezinski, the advisor of candidate Obama, said back in 1997 in a Foreign Affairs magazine article, he said, Eurasia is the world's axial supercontinent, and a power that dominates Eurasia would dominate two of the world's three most economically productive regions, Western Europe and East Asia. and that this the future of Eurasia will be of decisive importance to America's global primacy. So this is an elite that thinks only in terms of primacy, only in terms of domination, and the world is kind of tired of this. I don't blame them. It's time we grow up and get on with it and not be so obsessed with control, with domination, with all these things that don't smack really of democracy or genuine freedom. But the point about Eurasia is that they have absolutely everything they need to develop, and that's what the Shanghai Cooperation Organization is all about. It's gone through an evolution since the first crude version was started back in the late 1990s, and then 2001 it added Uzbekistan, I believe it was, as a new member, and began to define itself as kind of a Eurasian coming together, the worst nightmare of U.S. Henry Kissinger or Brzezinski or any of the foreign policy strategists of the post-war U.S. Foreign policy school. Ironically, the U.S. foreign policy under the last two regimes of two terms of Bush have created the worst nightmare that the U.S. power elites could dream of, and that is the cohesion of China and Russia, something that 5-6 years ago no one would have thought possible, but now simply the reality I'll tell you how they view the U.S., the Chinese and the Russian political elites, they view the U.S. as an empire collapsing just as the British Empire collapsed between World Wars I and World War II, and that it's lurching out more and more desperately for levers to kind of maintain their domination of the world, their hegemony, as some people call it. And so what they're doing is saying, okay, the Titanic of the dollar system is sinking, and it's definitely going to sink further with the debt that's being generated by the Treasury bailouts of Wall Street and the unemployment that's going to generate, because the real economy is not being bailed out. It's quite the opposite. Then the dollar, to stay with the dollar system, is to go down with the Titanic. So what they're doing is very carefully, I think at this point, exploring the potentials for stabilizing their trade relations and their monetary relations, independent of what happens to the dollar. That is a long, difficult road, and that's based on confidence, transparency, trust, and so forth between the member nations of the SCO, between Russia and China and whatnot. There's a lot of work got to be done. People shouldn't have illusions that this is something you can write in by a decree. But I think the fact that they're doing that should serve as a warning signal to Washington that they better wake up and start rethinking grand strategy from the ground up, because the whole strategy on which the dollar imperium has been based since 1944 in the Bretton Woods has collapsed. That was the significance of August 2007. That was the significance of Alan Greenspan's securitization revolution.
Oh, so much more to go into, Bill. Let's take another break, and we'll come back. There are real leaks in the Titanic. There's no question about that. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The News Hour. On with Bill Engel on his new book, Full Spectrum Dominance. Bill, I sense that the U.S. empire has been declining for a long time, but certainly 8 years under George Bush just really speeded up the process.
Well, I date it back to August 1971 as a pivotal turning point, and the policies that were locked in economically and financially after the break with the gold exchange rules of Bretton Woods by Nixon. I think that was the beginning of a walking away from the necessary improvements of the internal infrastructure of the United States, the industry of the United States, and so forth, to the buy cheap, sell dear outsourcing era that we've had over the last several presidents. And that's a slow, long-term rot from inside that has now come to a crisis point. And only if we understand that do we understand how absolutely unsuitable all of the nonsense that's been proposed so far by Secretary Geithner, by Economic Advisor Summers, and by the Obama administration. It's doing nothing but making the situation economically worse in the long term in order to bail out Wall Street, who caused the problem in the first place.
Well,
it's like taking a cancer in a human body and say, well, this cancer is just on the verge of starving. Let's feed it a little bit more so it can have enough strength. It's mad.
Oh, it's mad. There's no question. I think Obama took bad Bush policies and just made them so much worse. And he's gotten away with it, Bill, because he's a very affable guy. People like him. He's not George Bush. That may be his strongest quality. And people have no idea what this guy is really doing. They'll catch on sooner or later.
Well, I think they're starting to have doubts, but it's far too slow for what's required here.
Oh, absolutely. And it's right
street marches, demanding that the administration and the Congress address the needs of the American population and not the needs of the money trust in New York. Simple as that. It's not any complicated thing. Why do we bail out brain-dead banks, the 10 or 19 institutions that have caused this problem? Why don't we isolate them? You want to talk about a pandemic? This is a pandemic of financial fraud gone amok here, this securitization revolution. So draw a circle around them. There are only five major banks that are responsible for the overwhelming majority of these toxic waste derivatives. So let's isolate them. Let's quarantine them. Let's put their boards of directors and their chief executive officers on the docket and have them stand trial instead of having them gain reward for their misdeeds.
Well, there's no question about that. You said you gave a talk. You sent me an email. You gave a talk in Istanbul, and the perspective there on how destructive U.S. policies are is so different than what we hear in the mainstream here. Any thoughts to pass on about that?
Well, this was a conference of industry that is really trying to find solutions to strengthen. Keep in mind, the Ottoman Turkey before the First World War was one of the vast regions of the world, similar to Tsarist Russia and so forth in extent of territory. And they have a cultural history. They have, of course, conflicts and everything else. But they have a knowledge of their neighbors that certainly the United States would never acquire, no matter how many State Department special schools are on Azerbaijan history or this, that, and the other thing. And what they want to do is build on that heritage, build on that history, and live with each other in peace and economic prosperity. And what does Washington do? They come along and say, well, Turkey, you need to send your Turkish soldiers to get killed alongside American and German soldiers in Afghanistan for the security of Asia. Well, what security is that for Turkey? It's mad. Or Turkey, you need to send more of your troops down to Iraq to help build up the U.S. military presence there. Well, what is that going to do? What is the purpose of that? So these countries are beginning to discuss very, very seriously the idea of well, Russia announced just about 10 days ago, Putin announced that Russia is not as a single country going to continue application for World Trade WTO membership, but is going to do so in an alliance with Belarus and do this as a package deal or nothing, which in effect means they're calling off the WTO negotiation because simply they would have to abide by the rules of the globalization game, that rules that were written in Washington and not necessarily in the interests of the Russian economy. So they are definitely stepping back from this westernization agenda that they've been locked into since the collapse of the Soviet Union. That doesn't mean they're going back to capitalism. I've been in Russia several times in the last months giving talks and meeting with people. They have no desire to dominate their neighbors militarily or whatever. This you know, this is a fairy tale that's sometimes being brought up as a boogeyman in the U.S. media. But what they do want is a better life for their children and their grandchildren. They want to stabilize their own economy. They want to build a modern infrastructure, a modern industry, so that they can enjoy decent health care, a decent standard of living, and have enough food to eat. And that's the same basic agenda of all their neighbors. So what I found is that people were very, very disturbed by what they saw coming out of Washington in recent years, and they weren't they had no grand illusions about what Mr. Obama offered when he was in Ankara in Turkey back in April. They're very skeptical. They've been burned many, many times by U.S. foreign policy in the last years. So the only one, if you want to have a blame game, I think the only place you have to point the finger of blame is directly back at Washington's foolish policies toward that part of the world. But they are definitely finding or seeking ways of closer cooperation. I think that's all to the good for the world economy.
Well, if they can do it, that would be wonderful. Individually, no country can stand up against the U.S., but in alliance, they absolutely can do it, whether it's SCO, whether it's the BRIC countries. We better wish them luck, Bill, because if they can succeed in what they may be talking about, and it's hard for you or me to know what they talk about in private meetings, but I think it is clear from what you're saying, they have to be concerned. They see policies that have been so destructive to them. And then the U.S., the one difference between the U.S. empire, Bill, and all others preceding it, is we have this terrible nuclear arsenal, and we have a national policy to unilaterally use it in a first-strike mode. I mean, this is crazy. Even if one of these countries is not targeted, you start dropping a few nuclear bombs. My God, I mean, the spread of radiation alone will cause so much harm over such a vast area. It's very scary.
Yeah, it's very scary.
I mean, we came to the brink of nuclear, real serious trouble back in 1962, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
And we never knew just how close we came until they had a reunion, 10 years ago? Now, whatever, in more recent years, the old timers still around came back and compared notes and realized that we really came to the edge of the abyss. And by sheer luck, we did not cross over, but it could have happened.
Yeah, and after that, interestingly enough, it's now come out in various archive documents and so forth. After that, John Kennedy became absolutely alarmed at how close the world was to the nuclear war by miscalculation, and he opened up a back channel to Khrushchev, who was then the head of Russia, the Soviet Union, and also to the Pope at that time, to get a dialogue and build channels of trust so that the miscalculation would never come to pass, as it almost did in Cuba. And he fired Alan Dulles as head of the CIA after the Bay of Pigs fiasco. That probably had something to do with his premature death, as some people think.
I would say that, and we could add a few other factors in there as well. And Kennedy was no saint, but compared to some of the ones who followed him, we would certainly trade the present situation for a Kennedy in the White House. I think his policies, he would at least try to be a little saner. Whether he could succeed or not, Bill, is another question.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that there he realized that this nuclear war by miscalculation, and he realized that some of the highest brass of the Pentagon and the military establishment were stark raving nuts. And
indeed,
they have accumulated a power that is absolutely terrifying. Most Americans don't realize that.
You know, you made a point in Full Spectrum Dominance back in 1945. I doubt too many people know this. I mean, I don't think we've ever outlived this kind of an idea. But in 1945, just before Roosevelt died, and a month before Germany surrendered, Churchill tried to convince Eisenhower and Roosevelt to launch an immediate full-scale war against the Soviet Union.
Well,
in other words,
hit them
when they're down and use captured German divisions and just wipe them out once and for all. Winston Churchill.
Yeah. Yeah,
way Churchill thought, just imagine how some of the truly mad people running things in Washington, and I don't know who they are in the UK. The UK just seems to go along as an echo chamber to what Washington does. It's crazy, but the neocons are still very powerful in the U.S., and, of course, the institutionalized power structure where – And you point this out in the book. If they have an opportunity to do it, I think they'll go all out to take Russia completely out of the picture.
Well, it's the only thing standing in the way of the long-term agenda of full-spectrum dominance, domination of the oceans, domination of the land area of this planet, domination of outer space, inner space, cyberspace. And then the next step will be mandatory forced compulsory vaccination enforced by Homeland Security for God knows what putative diseases that don't even exist in order to create a 1984 Orwell version of the world where people walk around like zombified robots and you have a drastic reduction of the world population of what the elites call useless eaters. And out of that, I think some of these people really think that that's the if I may divert a second to something that's not in the full spectrum dominance book. There was a meeting in Manhattan about a month ago. It leaked out in a small New York City Irish newspaper, but purportedly it was convened by David Rockefeller, the 93-year-old patriarch of the Rockefeller machine, and co-sponsored by Bill Gates, the wunderkind of Microsoft and one of the nominally richest people in the world, and by his friend Warren Buffett. So Gates, Buffett, and Rockefeller convened a meeting at the home of the president of the Rockefeller University in Manhattan, Paul Nurse, a Nobel Prize chemist who... and their whole agenda discussion, the only people invited were reportedly fellow billionaires like they, and their whole agenda was not to talk about what did we do wrong by supporting financial liberalization during the Clinton era and the Bush era, and how do we stabilize the financial system. No, they're not at all concerned about that. What they were concerned about is the too rapid growth of population in the developing parts of the world and the threat that could pose to our power and influence. So they're talking about population reduction. That's the only logical conclusion of such a discussion. Population reduction on a large scale. Well, I think the ultimate aim of this lunatic swine flu panic that's being generated by CDC in Atlanta and by World Health Organization by declaring pandemic and all these nonsensical things for something that's admittedly no more dangerous than a common cold, that the aim of this is to get compulsory vaccination and to get parents begging for their children to be vaccinated with vaccines that are toxic and haven't even gone through normal tests and are put on the market to stop something that hasn't even been proven by WHO to exist. I challenged a spokesman from WHO on a live television broadcast to print on the WHO website the isolated so-called H1N1 influenza A swine flu virus and the chemical characteristics of that isolated virus with the electron microscopic representation. And they cannot do that. They haven't done it to date because it's not doable by them. So, this is the kind of madness that but I think that all fits together. The militarization of public health, the militarization of space, the militarization next, the Obama administration is talking about cyberspace, the internet, and so forth. So, if people enjoy being passive and going down this road, that's of course their decision, but I think it's fair that they at least have an idea what some of the consequences of this are, and that's why I wrote the Full Spectrum Dominance book.
Oh, well, absolutely, Bill. And if readers want to know, if listeners want to know more about culling the population, you covered it to some extent in your Seeds of Destruction,
yes,
going back to Henry Kissinger and his What was the number? NSM
200? NSSM 200, yes. 1975, it became official presidential policy under Gerald Ford.
Almost 40 years ago, 35, 40 years ago.
Yep.
Rockefeller Foundation involved in funding population culling, getting, as you say, get rid of the useless feeders. And they don't do it by mowing us down with machine guns and missiles. They can sterilize women. They can inject us with dangerous vaccines. They can do all kinds of clever things. People don't even know what's happening to them.
Yeah.
Well, we both wrote about dangerous vaccines. Your article inspired mine, Bill, and we'll have a program July 3rd on that topic alone, and we'll talk about how dangerous this stuff is. And that nobody should get anywhere near it. We do have some things in our defense. There's no way in the world anybody's going to stick a needle in my arm unless they clobber me on the back of the head, and they do it. I'm out cold, and they do it, and I don't know they did it. But I'll hide under the bed so they can't find me or something like that. But to think our government is doing stuff like this. You wrote about Sarkozy in France possibly declaring this.
Yeah.
But I guess there's a G7 alliance. G7 is really a very dangerous group of countries. It's the non-G7 countries that we need to have our faith in.
Well, there are a lot more of them than the seven.
Indeed, there are. Indeed, there are. But they need to ally and have enough backbone to realize.
Well, there's a rich world out there, and there's something like 6 billion people that are interested in peace and stability for their children and their grandchildren. So I think that's a good starting point.
Oh, I would say the great majority, indeed. It's only a handful that are causing all this trouble.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the NewsHour, final segment with Bill Engdahl. Bill, the book is absolutely fabulous, just like your other two. Again, the title, Full Spectrum Dominance, meaning control of everything imaginable, as Bill outlined. And I love the subtitle, A Totalitarian Democracy. It just makes a mockery of what we call democracy. And in the New World Order, well, the New World Order is the order that the elite few set up for themselves, that the more power they get by exploiting us or disempowering us.
Mm.
It's a great title. It's a great book. People need to read it to know what's going on. And it's the way we can defend ourselves if we know. And if enough of us realize how grievously we're being harmed, then maybe we'll just do something to respond.
Yeah, well, let's certainly hope so. But I think once people have a few of the missing pieces of the puzzle in their world that are put in place, the rest they can figure out quite capably. And I have tremendous respect for capacities of most Americans if they're given half a chance. The problem is that the media tries to dumb them down and feed them on pablum so they don't have a clue what's going on in the real world and the consequences of that for their own families and their future. But once they have that, then you have a quite different situation. I think that's the kind of thing that this confab in Manhattan at the Rockefeller University were concerned about. They're not quite convinced that they have everything under control, that they have that full spectrum dominance. It's not a done deal yet, and that's where normal human beings come in. The 5.99999 billion of us that are sane and normal and want to live in peace with our neighbors and not kill them and make war and pit one against the other to divide and conquer.
Well, they're not happy with the things that you write, Bill, and programs like this and globalresearch.ca. If they ever get control of the Internet, we both know that they want that. And that would be a calamity. The Internet isn't our salvation, but it's the one space where we have freedom to say what we want, write what we want, and reach a fair number of people, hopefully more all the time. They worry about that.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Well, the book is absolutely fabulous, Bill, and we will talk more about it and the things you write. I urge people not just to read your books, but read your articles that are absolutely just as important and need to be read. We don't get information like this. You dig out stuff that even some of the good writers and good analysts don't get. And I guess it's because you have contacts and you go out and you dig this stuff out like an investigative journalist. So I applaud you for what you do, Bill.
Well, I hope people are listening. It's a modest contribution, but I think more and more people are beginning to realize that something's gone drastically wrong, and it's not what we're being told in the conventional media. As long as things like Global Research and other outlets, like you mentioned, exist, I think we have a very good chance of doing something about this and changing it for the better.
Well, I get smatterings of response thanking me for this program and bringing on people like you, and even a phone call once in a while. But this is terrific, and we're picked up. We got picked up on a New York station. This is what we need to, what needs to happen. Spread the word, have it reach more people, realize that this is what we need to know, and we need to defend ourselves, because if we don't defend ourselves, nobody will do it for us.
Yeah.
Our government is there to harm us, not help us. Bill, this was a great hour. We didn't have enough time. I wish we could have talked about a lot more, but you will be back, right?
Thank you, Stephen. We'll talk again.
Okay, Bill, thank you so much, and join us again tomorrow. We will continue talking about world events. Join us then, and the rest of the week as well.